Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Fantasy Grill. My name is Jonathan Chan. I'll be joined by my co-host, Jamie Branje, and we're here to bring you the hottest takes of the offseason. Today on the show, we have a couple of injuries, one major contract offer to a prospect, and we'll be going over our first base preview with sleepers, busts, and rookie prospects coming up for the 2019 season. As always, I'll be with Jamie Branje. Jamie, how's it going?
Could be going better. If you guys noticed, things coming in a little bit weird today. I'm recovering from an illness, so hopefully nothing goes too wrong. We spent the last week in Florida, which we were going to mention a little bit about, covering spring training with the Blue Jays, but we're settled back in the cold here in Toronto. Hopefully we're getting back into the warm weather soon.
Yes, you did mention spring training. That was an awesome experience. I think that definitely for me, the first time I ever covered anything like that, getting to talk to Jays prospect Adam Klopfenstein for myself, just seeing them go through their offseason workouts, seeing how everything works at minor league camp. It was a great experience.
For me too. And I know you guys listening, maybe you think that we are professionals. We are still students. It was the first time for a lot of us. We got to interview a couple of prospects. I got to speak with Justin Dillon, the right-handed pitcher for the Blue Jays, and also Dominic Abadesa, who's playing center field for Bluefield this year. Great experience. It was just a great experience to be around the minor league camp. We got to see what these guys put in day after day. We got to see kind of the parts of the game that you don't get to see too often when you're just watching the major league game. It was an awesome experience.
Well, can't wait to do that again soon. And don't tell them we're students. We are professionals. All right. So on to the major news here. First off, Blue Jays top prospect, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., sure everybody's heard he's had a strained oblique and he's going to be out at least 3 weeks. A little bit of convenient timing there on the injury, don't you think, Jamie?
Definitely. And we sent out the news on Twitter and I said the exact same thing was, well, doesn't this just work out well for everybody? I mean, well, obviously except for Vladdy, but it covers up all the problems that Atkins and Shapiro, Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro had with trying to justify not bringing up Vladdy until the service accruement period had passed for the season. So that takes that up nicely. Now they can just say, oh, well, we're going to keep him in the minors for 3 or 4 weeks. We're going to make sure that he's ready for game speed, and then we'll bring it up when we need to. Because the lies they were telling before were weak, and people were getting pretty tired of it. So, you know, it works out well for everybody.
The good thing about this injury is that it doesn't actually affect his draft stock. He was going to miss the first 3 weeks of the major league season anyways. So, hurt or not, he's not going to miss any more time than he was originally scheduled for. So, still should be drafted around the same place.
Yeah, exactly.
Next injury we have is Angels pitcher Andrew Heaney. He's been shut down for quite a while, actually. Well, he's shut down for the second time this offseason, inflammation in his elbow. He's not a major pitcher, but he's somebody that could have been a solid lower rotation guy for your team. But with multiple elbow issues, now he's being shut down. I'm going to take him off my draft board for now. I don't know about you, Jamie, but I don't like messing around with elbow stuff.
Yeah, it's always going to be risky, especially when he's had the injury history. So it's just another one of those Angels players. It's one of those teams that just seems to find injuries for their pitchers, and he's the first to go down this year. Unfortunately, he's probably not going to be the last, so we'll keep an eye on it, but I would keep him off my team unless you were in a very, very, very deep league.
Like the one we're about to play in?
Yes, exactly. We're about to start up a 20-man league in a couple days, so that's going to be an adventure.
20-man league with a couple of people that haven't played before, so I'm expecting Vlad to go second overall, Pilar third. But it's a good learning experience for everybody. It's going to be a great time. Next thing we have on the docket is rumors of the Chicago White Sox offering Eloy Jimenez an 8-year, $100 million contract. Theoretically, if he signs this, he would start the next 8 years in the majors, and it would just make his draft stock rise exponentially. Right now, he's being drafted as if he was not going to start the year in the majors, and maybe come up after a couple weeks in April. If he starts the year, it gives him a huge boost. Where would you be drafting him, Jamie?
He's going to be he's a little bit of a risky pick. I mean, what everyone's been talking about him and what we've seen with him in the minors is something pretty comparable to what we had with Ronald Acuña Jr. last year. So he's a very highly touted outfield prospect. The fact that they're giving him 8 years, $100 million, with what we've heard about him, is actually going to be a bit of a steal for the White Sox. It's an interesting contract. Assuming he signs it, they're going to get a player that is meant to be an all-star for years to come for quite the discount. As far as fantasy goes, I could see him going maybe in the middle tier of outfielders. I could probably take him within the 10 to 15 top outfielders. So that's probably, you're probably looking in the maybe 6th, 7th, 8th round for a player like that. You're totally banking on what he can do, not what he has done. So it's always going to be a little bit of a risk there. But with prospects this highly touted recently, it hasn't often gone badly for them. So you're not taking a huge risk, but it's always just banking on that potential when you're going to draft a player like Jimenez.
For sure, right now Fantasy Pros has him at 122 overall or the 37th outfielder. I think that gets a bit of a boost now where he's should be above Michael Brantley anyways.
Yeah, well, I need to single out Brantley there. I don't know
We know Brantley's not going to play the full year. If Jimenez gets signed, he will play the full year.
All right.
So on to our first base preview now. Of course, we'll go through the Fantasy Pros list first and then compare that to our own and to each other's lists. So Fantasy Pros has Paul Goldschmidt, new Cardinals first baseman then Freddie Freeman, Anthony Rizzo, Reese Hoskins, who is now in probably the most dangerous lineup in the league, in my opinion. Dodgers first baseman / outfielder Cody Bellinger, Canadian Joey Votto, Jose Abreu, the White Sox, new Rockies first baseman Daniel Murphy. Weird for me to say, first baseman Daniel Murphy.
new Rockies player, we'll say.
Infielder Matt Carpenter and Jesus Aguilar. Jamie, what is how does your list go, and what is your biggest gripe here with the Fantasy Pros list?
Okay, so my list, and we'll post it on Twitter as we always do. So we've got a lot of agreement at the top with Fantasy Pros. I mean, it's pretty hard to argue a lot of their points at the very top of the list. So I was going, we've got Paul Goldschmidt at number one, Freddie Freeman, Reese Hoskins at number three, Anthony Rizzo. I put Matt Carpenter up pretty high, who's still going to be have first base eligibility for the Cardinals. I got Matt Carpenter at number five, and we've got Cody Bellinger at number six, Joey Votto, Daniel Murphy at number eight, Jose Abreu, and then I've got Max Muncy at number 10. My main complaint with the list that Fantasy Pros has, and we'll get into it a little bit later, is having Jesus Aguilar where they do. I think he's a little bit overvalued at that position. And at the same time, looking through the numbers and looking through what's been going on the past couple years, Carpenter's getting pretty undervalued by Fantasy Pros, I would say. So those are my main two complaints on the topic. What about you?
All right, so my list, again, like you said, the top of the list is pretty standard. Goldie, Freddie Freeman, Reese Hoskins, Rizzo. I have Bellinger at number five as well. Votto. And this is where I start to differ. I have Matt Carpenter at number seven. Joey Gallo at number eight. Talk a bit about him in a bit. Jose Abreu, number nine. And then Aguilar, number 10. You'll notice that I have Daniel Murphy off my list. The main reason for this is that out of my first baseman, I like a lot of power. At least I like to try to push 30 home runs with my first baseman. With Murphy, you don't know the kind of power he's going to have. Yes, he's going to Coors. It's no longer the absolute bandbox it was, but it's still an above average home run park. But with Murphy, if I'm drafting Daniel Murphy, I'm drafting him for his second base eligibility, not as my first baseman, which is why I kind of have him off my list. And the injury worries. As we talked about earlier with Heaney, somebody who's had such consistent injury issues, it's difficult for me to put them up at that position in my draft list, because we know that he's probably going to be missing some time, maybe less time than past years because he's at first base, but still difficult to buy in as a veteran. Well, as a veteran on the Rockies, you know he's going to be stealing playing time from some of the rookies. But it's not for me as a first baseman. I'd rather have the players above him on the list. But as a second baseman, I can see him being in a pretty high tier as a second baseman.
Yeah, I think we can probably agree at this point in his career that he's not a major league second baseman. I mean, he hasn't been for a couple of years. So.
As long as he has the eligibility, that's all that matters.
what I would say with him is he was really one of the faces of the launch angle revolution a few years ago. He was one of the guys that kind of reinvented his career back in 2015 when he, like a few other batters in the major leagues, just decided to start putting everything as high into the sky as they possibly can. Now, that is historically a very good recipe for success when you're playing in Colorado, because when it goes up in the air out there, it usually doesn't come down for quite some time. The only reason that he failed, but didn't bat nearly as well as he had in previous years as he did last year, was the hard hit rate, which plummeted down to 28% as opposed to the 40% he was holding thereabouts from 2015 to 2017 when he was a perennial MVP threat. So I understand why you'd have some trepidation with picking him, but all things considered, and let's remember that he's batting in an order with Nolan Arenado, with Charlie Blackmon, with a couple of good hitters on that lineup. I think if he can maybe just, I mean, there's always the injury concern. If he can stay healthy, he's not going to be working nearly as hard at first base as he has been in the past. If he can just keep things maybe a middle ground between 2018 and 2017 for him, you're pretty solid for 20 home runs. He's going to score a lot of runs playing in Colorado. I think he's worth a pick. I mean, obviously, he's not in the top tier of first baseman, but I think he's certainly worth a pick. And I have him right around where Fantasy Pros has him. So I'm not ready to go to sleep on Murphy quite yet. We'll give him one more year. We'll see what happens.
Everybody gets an extra year in Colorado, don't they? Never a time when somebody signs in Colorado, you're like, yeah, you know what? Let's not use him. look how that worked out for Ian Desmond.
Oh, he's his own case.
Ian Desmond. Anyways, so the next difference I guess we have on the list here is your own list. You have Dodgers, I guess, utility infielder, Max Muncy at number 10. Why don't you give us a little bit of a reason why?
Well, for me, it's part of the flexibility factor with him. He has an eligibility at three different positions. I feel like that's worth having somebody that can help you out in case other players go down. But with Muncy, he's had one major season, really, one good season in the majors. That was last year where he was an MVP candidate. He came out of nowhere and he was fantastic. You know, he had the batting average, scored runs, batted some runs in, had 35 home runs in just 481 plate appearances. So didn't even start the season in the majors. He came up in May, and from there on, it was just unbelievable numbers. So the rate statistics are going to back it up all the way. So this is on from StatCast. Well above average hard hit rate of 45%, above average exit velocity at 93 miles per hour on average. Walk rate and barreled ball rate were both in the top 1% of the league. So he was amongst the best hitters in the league in so many regards last season. Even if he regresses a little bit, we'll see him hitting, if he hits maybe 30 home runs, that's an elite lineup. There's a lot of good hitters on Los Angeles. And I just, if he can put it up for 162 games, I think we see a top five first baseman at best. I'm not going to put him in my top five because regression can't happen. We've only seen him do this for one season, but I could see him being a top five first baseman easily.
Yeah, completely agree. The thing you're going to get with Muncy is his batting eye. Like you said, he has an elite walk rate. I mean, he doesn't really swing pitches outside the zone either, so he's got the discipline. His outside swing rate is in the same realm as Joe Mauer. So you know the kid has he's got some control when he's at the dish. But I would put some regression to his home runs. I think you're probably looking at more 25 to 30 than 35. But like I said, as a somebody with a multi-position eligibility and the power and a good lineup, then Muncy at number 10, it can work. Next up, I have now I get to talk about him. So, Joey Gallo, I have him at number 8 on my list. I know a lot of people have problems with him because he provides more air conditioning with his strikeouts than the entire Globe Life Park does in the entire summer. I think Gallo's about 50% of the cooling there, but you got to follow the dingers. With Gallo, you know what you're going to get. Massive strikeout rate, 40 home runs, 90 RBIs, and it's something with, it's not something you can usually get that late in the draft, especially at first base now that it's gotten a little bit shallow with the later options, but with Gallo, he leads the league in barrel percentage, which means that he makes better, harder contact than anybody in the game by a wide margin. You know, just because he strikes out 36% of the time, it's okay. he decreased the strikeout rate last season by almost 2%. But the Rangers, they tend to bat him in the lower half of the order. If, you know, they take the good with the bad and they let him hit in the top half of the order, I think the plate appearances will go up by about 70 or 80 this season. And then you're looking at a guy that's hitting 45 home runs, 100 RBI, and 600 at-bats or 600 plate appearances. That's massive for somebody that's going quite low in drafts right now. That's just, for me, somebody that can give you that kind of power and win you a week just off a game or two. That's, I'll take the good with the bad. I'll take the 0 for 35 slumps and take my 40 dingers too.
Yeah, well, when it comes to Gallo, I left him off my list because, I mean, obviously he's one of these new, newly valued three-tier outcome kind of guys. But when you, I mean, the strikeouts, there's so many, and he's so prone to slumps. And we looked at him with the same kind of lens as we look at Chris Davis. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be batting 160 this season, but I'm just, I'm just saying. Guys like, Mark Reynolds, Adam Dunn, they can fall off a cliff so easily when your batting average for your career is just barely itching over the Mendoza line. It's just, I understand why you would pick him, especially as a later round pick. It's, you're getting a ton of value if he does well. If he doesn't, what if he's like a Chris Carter, just kind of drops off? He stops hitting 40 home runs. What if he only hits 25? What if the batting eye gets even worse, you know? That's why I'm not 100% sold. I mean, the production's there if he does well for his own by his own standards, but if he doesn't do well, if he has a bit of an extended slump, he's going to be lost in a little bit. So I don't know. That's it. I'm not safely picking Joey Gallo. I'll take him if he's there late and I need somebody, but I'm not confidently picking him, is what I would say.
I'm not getting off Gallo, especially if you play in OBP leagues or leagues that just count the walks as a stat. He's so much more valuable. He's looking at OBP around 320. It's not amazing, but that really softens the blow on the strikeouts, and it makes him a very easy mid-round pick, in my opinion. So we mentioned him a little bit earlier. Somebody you left off your top 10 list that Fantasy Pros had is Jesus Aguilar. So why don't you let us know a little bit about why he's going to be, skipping ahead here to just segue the segments. You have Aguilar as your bust.
Yep. Yes, I do.
Why is last year's breakout going to bust?
It's, excuse me. So it's just, for me, it was a very, very hot start. He was unbelievable in April and May and even into June, but you kind of got the feeling that when pitchers started to pick up on what he was doing, they started to pitch him differently and he started to suffer. So take a look at the splits from the first half to the second. So the first 68 starts that he had, bat 298 with a 995 OPS, 24 home runs and 70 RBI. I mean, that's for June to July production, that's unbelievable, that's amazing. But in the second half, last 55 starts of the season, he hit 245 with an OPS of 760 with only 11 home runs and 38 RBI. So he really, really regressed in the second half of the season. I don't think we've seen enough from him in any other season in his career in the majors to warrant overlooking that. And at the same time, the Brewers lineup, I mean, you've gone on often and loudly about how Yelich will not repeat what he did last year.
He will not.
On top of that, there's a couple of older bats in that lineup that are due for a little bit of regression. So Fantasy Pros has him as their 10th highest rated first baseman, and they brought up the point that you can find production similar to what he offers, assuming he puts up maybe 25 home runs, somewhere in that range. You can find similar production if you wait a couple rounds and go for a middling first baseman like CJ Krohn was the option was the example they use, which is harsh.
That's rough.
Certainly harsh, but yeah, I think you can get comparable value a lot later in the draft. So that's the only reason that I'm taking him as my bust. He's a little bit overvalued right now, I would say.
That's fair. The reason I have Aguilar in my top 10 is just, you know, he did perform well last year. I think maybe second half, you know, maybe he got tired. He's not used to the full schedule, what have you. But the Brewers lineup is good, regardless of whether I think Yelich is going to be is going to regress or not. The Brewers lineup is still one of the better ones in the league. Just process of being in that lineup, I think it gives him a little bit of value boost. And like the guys below him, they have a, you know, not as high of a ceiling as he does. So regression or not, I'm still willing to take him number 10, but I do see where you're coming from.
Right. And you you listed a familiar name, a name that may be a little sad that you listed it as your bust. You had Edwin Encarnacion, the longtime Blue Jays first baseman. He's made a new home for himself in Seattle this season. We're going to see how it goes. Why did you pick him as your bust?
Well, first, because he's, like you said, he's in Seattle, and they just, everything is sad in Seattle. I don't, everything their baseball team touches is just so sad these days. Sorry, Mariners fans, it's bad. But outside of just, you know, Seattle and their home park being very difficult to hit home runs in, Edwin, the last 5 years, his strikeout rate's gone up. His contact rate has gone down the last 5 years. And last year, he made a career low 57% contact rate, so not good. His average has been down the last 4 years. I think last year he had 257, lowest of his career, even through the years in Cincinnati when he struggled to do much. But this is just the year, you know, he's getting older. You can see the signs of old age last year in Cleveland in a much, much better lineup. Now that he's in a tougher park, in a worse lineup, I don't like taking Edwin this year, especially because he's a little bit, I guess, banged up. He didn't miss a whole lot of time, but there was always, you know, those scratches and bruises that gave you those worries.
Yeah, for sure. it was 246 that he bat last year, and his OPS of 810, lowest since 2011. I mean, there's been a pretty steady regression with him. His numbers have been going down consistently for the past couple years. But he still hit 32 home runs last year, 107 RBI, 74 runs scored. Good production, but I can't really argue against it. He's going to be 36 this season playing in Seattle. Unless you're Nelson Cruz, usually that means you're not going to be doing well. But we'll see. We'll see what happens with him.
Nelson Cruz is going to be hitting 30 home runs until he's like 50. He's the Frank Gore of baseball. Just keep going.
Apparently.
So up next, we have our sleepers. So just somebody that's, you know, being drafted a little bit low that has the potential to really outplay their draft position. You have the Yankees' new first baseman. It's been Greg Bird the last few years, but now we have the new kid on the block in the Bronx.
Yeah, Luke Voit. Last season, he got traded over to the Yankees at the trade deadline from St. Louis. And from then on, it was you couldn't hear enough about him. It seemed every game he was hitting a home run or two. He's hitting doubles. He's hitting everything that he came across. It was Greg Bird's just kind of fallen off the map now. It's like, where is he gonna play? Because they've got a very good hitter. So unbelievable numbers last year. Limited at bats. Only played for the Yankees in August and September, and as well in the playoffs. But some of the numbers he put up, oh my goodness. Barreled 20% of the balls that he hit, which means he's getting good contact on one in every five hits he makes. Hard hit rate of 54%, and average exit velocity of 93 miles per hour. These are just unbelievable, like unbelievable numbers. I mean, if you hold up those rates over a season, you're hitting 50, 60 home runs, you know, something like that. Obviously, he won't.
We're not saying that's going to happen. No, just disclaimer, saying that's going to happen.
Please not going to happen. That's not going to happen. Don't worry. So 148 plate appearances last year, so obviously it's a small sample size, but he hit .333 and knocked 14 home runs in those plate appearances. Take him with a later pick. Don't draft him in the top, you know, 10 rounds or so. But if he's there a little bit later, you can stash him on your bench and just see what happens. If he gets the playing time that he's kind of earned from last season and he does well with it, I mean, you've got yourself a very, very good first baseman with a later pick in the draft.
Yeah, I actually do like Voit. He was he's one of my sleepers as well. He took him. He made the year list first. A little upset. But my sleeper, not AL East anymore, but former Rays prospect now with the Cleveland Indians, Jake Bowers, came up. He was a highly touted for just, you know, his plate, his discipline, his ability to get a few steals as a first baseman as well. Last year he came up, he struggled quite a bit because he decided that he was a home run hitter now. He just swung and missed at everything. Hit a lower average than Joey Gallo, just so you know. This is how hard this is how hard he tried to hit home runs with. But he only struck out 27% of the time. Well, only when compared to Gallo. But
yeah.
He has the talent. If he decides to move back to what made him successful in the minors, which is getting on base, taking walks, that kind of thing. He stole 20 bases as a first baseman in 2017 with the Rays AAA affiliate. He's not a huge home run hitter, so I'm not sure why he decided to swing for the fences, but it really killed his average. He hit 201. I think if he gets back to what he's best at, walking, getting on base, not swinging at everything out of the zone, he can be a solid, you know, 260 hitter, steal you maybe close to double-digit bases over a full season. And if he gets the playing time in Cleveland's outfield, which he still has eligibility at first and outfield, he'll be a good pickup. The Cleveland outfield is awful. So it's the playing time's up for grabs. If he gets the time, I think he's going to contribute enough to be a, you know, at least a bench corner outfielder.
Yeah. Again, we're back on Michael Brantley, eh?
Brantley's in Houston now.
Oh, well, shows how much I know about him.
Well, it's okay. He's going to be on the DL soon enough.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, I guess I'll move on to my rookie since it's kind of related. That would be Rays prospect Nathaniel Lowe. He had an incredible year last year in the minors. He slashed, so he hit 330 with a 416 OBP and 568 slugging percentage across three levels last year. 27 home runs, excuse me. When he does come up, which will probably be either mid-season this year, you're looking at somebody that's going to hit for average, hit for power, and you know the Rays. They'll call up their prospects, they'll play well, and then they'll trade them.
Oh, yeah.
But they'll play well before they get traded. You know, always looking for cheaper ways to do it. So I wouldn't expect Lowe to come up too early, but when he does come up, he is a big left-handed bat that can do very, very well in the majors. I think his bat, the contact rate, and his ability to actually, you know, hit the ball, it'll keep him up there. It'll keep him successful, even if the, you know, the 330 average comes down a little bit.
Yeah, and for my prospect that we're going to talk about, keep an eye on him. Peter Alonso is the first baseman for the New York Mets in AAA right now. So he's going to be blocked by Jed Lowry and Todd Frazier. They're going to have some combination of those two on each corner of the infield. But considering that he's playing for the Mets in the minor leagues, the Mets players are always going to get hurt. It's just how it goes with that team. So he should get playing time at some point during the season, hopefully earlier rather than later. It's one of those players that you'll pick later in the round, especially if you're in a keeper league. He's going to give you a lot of value when he does make it up to the majors. But he's your prototypical first baseman. He's 6'3", 245 pounds. Big guy. Everybody saw the clip of Josh Reddick running into him and just falling straight to the ground. In 478 at-bats last season in the minors, he hit 36 home runs with 119 RBI and a .285 batting average. Even if that regresses a little bit, and it probably will when he gets into the majors, still, if he can put up, you know, in the 20s for home runs, he'll probably get to, 80, 90 RBI, assuming he's healthy for a season. I mean, he just hits the ball very well. He's been an unbelievable hitter in the minors, and he can probably try to keep it up in the majors once he does finally make it up here. He's worth picking in the later rounds, and especially if you're in a keeper or dynasty league.
Yeah, I think Alonso's probably one of the top prospects waiting to get called up this year. So, yeah, if you need a first baseman and you don't really want to draft one of the top five guys, Alonso's a really, really good backup option for whenever he does get called up. Knowing the Mets, they'll just burn a year of service time to call him up anyways. Not the best track record.
Yeah, they make mistakes.
Well, we're running out of time for this week. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. I would personally like to apologize if my mic went nuts. I don't have any feedback this week. So everybody listening, if I sound a little weird, it's because I can't hear myself through any right feedback. So if I get too loud or too quiet, I'm sorry. I'll try better. I'll try next time to fix the issues here in the room. But again, thank you everybody for listening. Next week we'll be back with our middle infield preview. So either second base or shortstop. Let us know which one you want to hear first. You can find me on Twitter at jchan_811. And Jamie, where can we find you?
You guys, you can find me on Twitter at jamiebranje, B-R-A-N-J-E, 2. Give us a follow. Give us some likes. Check out everything that we wrote for the trip to Florida. There's a lot of good articles written by us and by everybody else that went on the trip. So if you can find the time, it would be really awesome if you could get that shout out. Thanks so much for listening, guys.
Thank you. See everybody next week for more hot takes.